Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn, recording this on a Wednesday, December 11th, 2024. Hope everybody out there is enjoying their week and their day. Very cold and rainy out in the DMV after, just rained all day as we are just 2 weeks away from Christmas. Of course, I am celebrating another year on this earth, doing the thing that I love the most, and that is talking to you. As always, this is episode 984 of the Real Deal Podcast. We begin, as always, with the NFL game of the week. We have a busy podcast. There's a lot to get to. Green Bay, Detroit. Looked at the schedule. I knew I knew that this was going to be the game of the week. Like, the schedule, when I looked at the schedule. Now, the Rams-Buffalo came very close. I didn't think that game would be as good as it got, good as it was. We'll get to that later. But this was an absolute classic game. I love this game. Detroit able to get by 34-31. They converted, I believe, four of five fourth downs. Detroit, Green Bay could not keep them off the field when they had to in certain spots, especially in the key situations and the critical fourth downs. But with that being said, I think that this was a win for Green Bay. And that's the thing I love about the NFL. You can lose a game and win in the long term. Green Bay, I thought, played great the second half. Jordan Love was unbelievable in the second half after a mediocre first half. Green Bay physically played with Detroit. They obviously had opportunities to win this game in Detroit's home field. And I'm telling you right now, Green Bay is one of the handful of teams that I believe can get to and win a Super Bowl. I think that when you go back to 2007, you had the Giants playing against the Patriots. That was the undefeated Patriot team. Well, they were undefeated up until the Super Bowl. They were going for the perfect 16-0 season. And in Giants Stadium, Giants went toe-to-toe. Randy Moss catches a touchdown pass, and Patriots win. I believe it was 38-35. But that game really gave the Giants the confidence that they can not only play with this team, play with the Patriots, that they could beat the Patriots. Tom Coughlin, the Giant players, all said that that was a key game in terms of the Giants winning the Super Bowl. And of course, about a month or so later, the Giants would take out the Patriots in one of the biggest Super Bowl upsets of all time and end the Patriots' perfect season. That's the sense I got with this Detroit-Green Bay game. Detroit sweeps Green Bay. Green Bay is going to be a wild card team. There's no way they can win a division at this point. They are multiple games behind Detroit and Minnesota. So the division is out. It's just a matter of what seed that they will be in the AFC. They're going to be a playoff team. They're 9-4. They'll get to the playoffs. But with that being said, Green Bay on his best day can play and can beat anybody. They really can. And I picked Green Bay before the season to get to the Super Bowl and play Kansas City. I know Detroit and Philadelphia have been the class of the AFC this year up until this point. But I'm telling you right now, I believe Green Bay is as dangerous of a team as there is in the NFC with the physicality, the ability to run the ball. Jordan Love protects the football. Green Bay could beat anybody. Detroit keeps on rolling. This was, again, Detroit, and I've said this repeatedly, and I will continue to say this, I feel like home field advantage is more important for Detroit than it is for Philadelphia. So, excellent win for Detroit, but I even thought even a more impressive loss, if there is a such thing, for the Green Bay Packers. Fave three, I couldn't find four good games that were even worthy of talking about. It was a rough week, to say the least, in the NFL. Schedules, mind you, of the Saturday before Alabama plays Auburn in the SEC, where you'll see a bunch of SEC teams play basically a walk-on team before they head towards playing their conference rival, before Auburn, Alabama, before Georgia Tech, Georgia, before Clemson, South Carolina. That's what this week felt like. But we did get a great game in L.A. with the Bills and the Rams. This was the Josh Allen show, 6 touchdowns, but it wasn't enough as the Rams, the Rams played a near flawless offensive game. Stafford was unbelievable. The receivers, both of the receivers, Kupp, were unbelievable, and Paiuk was tremendous. And the Rams went a shootout, 44-42. Again, Josh Allen probably, I'm not going to say he clinched the MVP, but it's going to be hard to pry the MVP. At worst, he'll share it with Saquon Barkley, especially if Saquon Barkley goes up 2,000 yards. But Josh Allen, again, 6 touchdowns in the game. It still was not enough. Now, Sean McDermott, who's done a tremendous job this year, led the Bills to a 10-3 season, made a very tactical error down the stretch. As far as the clock management goes, he runs the ball, they get stopped on the run. They have to use the timeout, and they basically, that cost them a number of seconds. And keep this in mind, if you throw the ball and get a score touchdown, you have enough time. You maintain that timeout, and you save about 30. You save about at least 30 seconds. It was a horrible error in judgment. The Rams, it was a hard error in judgment by McDermott. No, not to say that they would have won the game. They probably would not have won the game. The odds were stacked against them, but that forcing them using that timeout in that spot, only having 2 timeouts and them getting the ball, they just didn't have enough time to get a stop and get the ball back and kick a game winning field goal. But in regards to that, the Rams deserve to win this game. They clearly outplayed Buffalo throughout the majority of this game. They had a double digit lead on Buffalo. It was only Josh Allen's heroics that kept Buffalo in this game. And Buffalo was due for this type of performance after a long winning streak. It's an out of conference game, so it doesn't hurt them from that standpoint. But this loss probably eliminates them out of any hope. Probably eliminates them for home field advantage. Though Kansas City does have a rough stretch coming up 4 days before Christmas, where they will play 3 games in 11 days. So we'll see. And they do have, again, they do have the head-to-head edge over Kansas City. But this is the Rams. Again, Rams are a very interesting team. Obviously, they're a tough team. They have some players on defense. If the Rams get in the playoffs, they're not a first round team that I would want to see, to be honest with you. The Rams, they have a lot of offensive talent. They have a Super Bowl winning quarterback. We know Kupp is getting healthier. We know what their receivers can do. Solid running game. So the Rams would be interesting if they were to get to the playoffs in a first round, in a first round matchup. Again, this was a Josh Allen, 424 yards of total offense, 424 yards total offense and 6 touchdowns. Kansas City survives again. They get a field goal. They get a game with a field goal that goes off the crossbar to go in. Kansas City now has won the division, 9 straight division titles. They win these close one score games. That's 15 straight one score games that they've won. Remember, the Buffalo loss was not a one score game. You look at dynasties over the course of NFL history. They're certainly in the midst of one right now, with the 9 straight division titles. You cannot just you can't sit up there and just ignore how hard it is to year in and year out win your division. I mean, the AFC East has not had back-to-back division winners in basically in 20 years since 03, 04. And they're not going to have one this year, as you know, the Eagles are, you know, are going to be the Eagles have or basically one game away from clinching the NFC East, the AFC East, and that will give them, again, that will be like the 21st straight year that the AFC East would have a different winner. But again, I'm not going crazy over Kansas City winning a close game. Kansas City's been doing this, what Kansas City does. And the Chargers are a very good team. Chargers are a physical team. We know how good the Chargers defense is. And we know that the Chargers have played Kansas City tough, despite the fact that they rarely beat them. They played them and they played them extremely tough over the past 4 or 5 years, 3 or 4 years. But this was Kansas City being Kansas City. You want to talk, you know, you want to plug codes at Kansas City in terms of Mahomes, and, you know, can Kansas City win another championship with a offense that is solid but not great? We'll see. I mean, they still have a top 7 defense in yards and points allowed in yards, and they will eventually get Buckner back, but it's going to be a defining stretch for Kansas City. They have 3 games in 11 days coming up. After this week's game, they will have 3 games in 11 days starting at Christmas. So them, along with Houston and Baltimore, those will be defining stretches for those particular teams who all have playoff and some even Super Bowl aspirations. Philadelphia survives Carolina 22-16. That was not the story of this game. The story of this game was, despite the fact that Philadelphia has won 9 straight, despite the fact that they are in total control of the NFC East, despite the fact that they are at worst co-favorites to win the NFC along with Detroit, you have some not so happy wide receiver in A.J. Brown, who was asked about the game where the offense could improve. A.J. Brown said, the passing game. Now, Jalen Hurts, I understand Jalen Hurts has had under 200 yards passing in his last 3 games. I get it. I understand Jalen Hurts has only thrown for 300 yards only one time this year. But when you dig deep in terms of his stats and the production, it is not that far off in comparison to his runner-up MVP season in 2022. 16 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He is 7th in Q. He is 7th in quarterback rate in quarterback rating. He has an overall quarterback rating of 102. He has 29 total touchdowns. And again, his stats, his numbers, go look at them. Comparisons to now, to 2022, they're not that far off. He's not turning over the football like he was last year. He has last year 15 interceptions. This year only has 5 interceptions. 13 rushing touchdowns. So, I thought we might have a legit gripe that AJ Brown could have a legit gripe about Jalen Hurts and his play. I don't think so. When a team has won 9 straight, I think it's hard to come at your quarterback. Now, in all fairness to A.J. Brown, he was put in a tricky spot with the question. It's not like he got on the soapbox and just completely threw Jalen Hurts under the bus and was unprovoked by the reporter. The reporter asked him, where could the offense improve? And certainly, if you're A.J. Brown, you're not going to say the offensive line. They have one of the best offensive lines in football. You're not going to say the running game. They have right now the best running back in football and an MVP candidate. So there was only one other aspect of the offense that could improve, and that was the passing game. So, you know, I think it was a slight shot. I don't think it was completely throwing Jalen Hurts under the bus. But it's certainly something that you don't want to hear out of a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and out of a team that has won, again, 9 straight games and has there and really has a legit chance to get to and to win the Super Bowl. Not something you want to hear. So that's your fave three. This probably will be, again, next week's podcast, we will get 4 quality games for sure. That's without question. Next week's podcast, we're going to get 4 quality games. We're going to deep dive the college football playoff. So the playoff is all set. Obviously, you have some history as far as the format, 12 teams. Again, a lot of bitching and moaning about Alabama not getting in. And you heard Nick Saban, who was hot. Saban tried to hide us. Nick Saban was absolutely livid. Like, I know he tried to play professional, and I know he tried hard, but Nick Saban, let me tell you something, Nick was hot that Alabama didn't get in. And I'm going to tell you something right now, Alabama absolutely has nobody to blame but themselves in terms of not getting in. They didn't deserve to get in. They lost 3 games. And I mean, here's the bottom line. You lose, if you're like, you lose 3 games, you lose to 2 teams, you lose to a bad Oklahoma team, you lose to a 6-6 Vanderbilt team, you don't win your conference, you finish what? They finished 4th in the conference. Texas, Georgia, and Tennessee. I mean, it was really not a case for Alabama to get in. Like, there really wasn't, I'm sorry, there wasn't, I didn't have, I like, I, and by the way, I was shocked that Alabama didn't get in over SMU, considering the fact that they are Alabama. Like, I was shocked from that standpoint. But they didn't deserve to get in. And the committee absolutely made the right decision in not letting Alabama in. 3 losses with no conference title in the regular season, no conference title in terms of conference championship game. Clemson gets in because they won the conference championship. So again, I had zero problem with Alabama not getting none whatsoever. And I heard a lot of complaining about the format, and I heard a lot of complaining, like, you know, about how fair is it for certain teams in terms of their brackets. Here's the bottom line. It is, you're going to have to be some good teams to win a national championship. Now, the one thing that annoys me is the automatic bid, the automatic top 4 seed for a conference championship winner. I don't think Boise State, I don't think Arizona State or Boise State should have gotten a top 4 seed over the likes. I don't think those two teams are top 4 seeds myself. And I don't think it should be based off the top 4 seeds should be based off the winning the conference championship. I always put more stock into the regular season championship. Always put more stock into the regular season championship. Texas, from start to finish, was one of the most consistent football teams in the country. They won their conference regular season, lost a tough overtime game to Georgia. Give Georgia all the credit in the world, losing their quarterback at halftime and just fighting and clawing their way. They were getting badly outplayed in the first half by Texas. The defense shut Texas down in the second half, and they did enough offensively with the running game. And, you know, even with the quarterback turning the ball over, they did enough offensively to get by to gut out a win against Texas. But I don't believe that Arizona State, I don't believe that Arizona State or Boise State should have been ranked higher than Texas. Okay. I just don't buy that whatsoever. But again, that is, this is the first year that they will tweak that. They will tweak that and we'll go about our business. I think it's going to be very hard, very hard for a team outside the top four to win a national championship. You're talking about having to win, you know, if you're not getting one of those first round buys, you're talking about having to win four games to win a national championship. Four. That is, and that's basically, and again, you get somewhat of a break. You get like a week and they get like a week and a half off. But these top four seeds have an enormous advantage as far as being fresh and not having to travel as much. Enormous advantage. Enormous. And again, people want to complain about Auburn getting a bad deal, excuse me, about Oregon getting a bad deal, having to face the winner of Tennessee or Ohio State. If you're one of the top two, if you are the number one seed, then you're going to have to play a tough team. Then you should be able to beat whoever. You should be able to beat Tennessee or Ohio State you should be able to beat Tennessee or Ohio State if you're a national championship caliber team. So I don't want to hear any complaining from that standpoint. If you're a great team, if you're capable of winning a national championship, you should be able to beat one. Should be able to beat one of those two teams. Again, the most important thing about the college football thing right now is this is the first year. It's going to get tweaked. They're not going to stay status quo. That things are going to get fixed as far as the seeding and reseeding and how you gauge division, how you gauge who's going to be in the first four. So we'll see what happens. I think this is as wide open of a playoff that you will ever see, to be honest with you. I haven't been impressed. I mean, I know you want to say pound for pound, Oregon has been the most consistent team. Sure. Texas before their loss to Georgia. Their only two losses are to Georgia. Georgia has a championship pedigree, but who knows about their quarterback? If Beck can't play, then I don't see it. To me, can't win three games to win a national championship. And you have a bunch of teams that, you know, feasted. You know, we don't know how good Penn State is. We don't know how good Texas is. Clemson probably shouldn't even, you know, I can make a case that Clemson probably is not even the top 12 team, that they were fortunate to play in a bad conference. And they were fortunate, you know, they got fortunate with what happened to Miami down the stretch. Again, Indiana, another team that didn't play, that didn't really beat a top-notch opponent. So a lot of teams in these playoffs benefited from soft schedules. And you had Nick Saban complaining about that from an Alabama standpoint. Alabama beat some quality teams, beat some ranked teams. But what I would say to any Alabama fan is, again, you lost three games. Lost three games. It's a lot of losses. And if you're going to lose three games, you have to either win your regular season conference championship or the postseason conference championship. You can't have three losses and be a non-automatic qualifier and me feel sorry for you. I'm sorry. I just can't. It just won't happen. I can't feel sorry for you from that standpoint. All Alabama had to do was win. You know, the Tennessee loss is fine. That was on the road. All they had to do was beat either Vanderbilt or Oklahoma. They win one of those two games, they're in. There's no way that they would have kept a 10-2 Alabama team out of the playoffs. No way. There's no way. A 10-2 Alabama team would have been in the playoff. Period. No matter of fact, you know, they would have been, like a 10-2 Alabama team would have been in the playoff, no question about it. But they lost three games, and, you know, here we are. Most fascinating matchup, I think, first round. I like the Ohio State-Tennessee matchup. Tennessee has a great defense. Ohio State kind of tailed off at the end of the season. had the horrible loss at Michigan. We'll see if they can recover from that. But that is by far to me the most intriguing matchup of the playoffs, and it should be a lot of fun. Again, this playoff will start December 20th, and to me, it's beautiful. You eliminate a bunch of meaningless bowl games that frankly no one cared about. Even if you had the Christmas break off and nothing to do but watch football, some of those bowl games were impossible to watch. So you kind of negated many of those games. And now the playoffs again, you'll be having from December 20th to what? January 21st, December 20th to January 10th, you will have some high level, probably more, you're going to have some high level college football. So Jay-Z, along with Sean Puffy Combs, is being sued by an anonymous Jane Doe, who is accusing both Jay-Z and Sean Diddy Combs of raping her when she was 13 years old. This is, of course, in 2000. At an after party, a private after party after the MTV Music Awards, she claims that she was drugged after taking a drink. The victim claims that they were in a room with Combs, Carter, and a female, and a third female celebrity that has yet to be named. Jay-Z, when this came out on Sunday during the afternoon, and it wasn't even 24 hours before it, on the same night, Jay-Z drops a statement from his iPhone, completely denying this, and not only vehemently denying it, he went on the attack, coming at Tony Busby, who is the lawyer of the alleged victim, who now would be, I would say, 30, yeah, my math is correct, 37 years old. Jay-Z and Sean Combs are both 55. They were born in the same year, 1969. And Jay-Z basically was like, not only is this basically ridiculous, I'm going to flip the turn the tables on you and expose you. Tony Busby, of course, is a high profile Texas lawyer who's taken on cases that involve the likes of Travis Scott, Deshaun Watson. He has a number of lawsuits filed against Sean Combs, and Jay-Z basically saying that, hey, you're a shakedown artist, ambulance chaser. You know, I'm from Brooklyn. We don't play these games. We don't play with children. And right now, again, I read the lawsuit, the 21 pages. Again, the majority of it is about Sean Combs. The majority of it is about Sean Combs. So, you know, take that in consideration. Jay-Z is going to challenge Tony Busby in a way that he's never been challenged before by any celebrity. Jay-Z is not your typical celebrity, not by any stretch of imagination. Jay-Z has made it clear that, I wonder if Tony Busby has done his due diligence on who Jay-Z is. Jay-Z is a cultural icon. He is one of the most important hip hop figure of all time. Definitely the most influential hip hop figure in the last 25 years. And Jay-Z is not respected by hip hop. He's revered, universally revered by the community. And I just wonder if Tony Busby understands that. You're not going to smear Jay-Z's name through the course of through public opinion. Like, you're not going to win the social media battle. You're not going to win. You're not going to turn the culture against Jay-Z without damning evidence. Right now, there hasn't been enough. Accusation is not enough. And again, Jay-Z and Diddy Puff Daddy are not the same. We have a video of Sean Diddy Combs beating the shit out of Cassidy. We saw that. The video came out. Jay-Z doesn't have any history of sexual assault. So it is going to be, again, Tony Busby is in for the fight of his political, his lawyer life, so to speak, coming at Jay-Z. And again, first thing you notice, you know, the difference between Jay-Z and Sean Diddy and Diddy. Diddy settles for $30 million against Cassie. Jay-Z says, I'm not giving you a red penny. Jay-Z, since this thing has started, we're recording this on a Wednesday. Since this thing came about on Sunday evening, Jay-Z has completely been on the offensive. Completely been on the offensive. He's media trained. He's, again, revered by the culture. And he's seemingly saying that I will use any resource, all my resources, financial resources, to fight this case and to not only win this case, but expose this lawyer and embarrass this lawyer. So if Tony Busby has any chance of winning this case, I hope that he will understand the cultural significance, importance of one Sean Carter. And again, this is me. It's not me defending Jay-Z. I've had many issues with Jay-Z and how Jay-Z has moved in regards to Colin Kaepernick, the NFL, that whole ordeal. But I can't sit up here and condemn Jay-Z based off the fact that he was associated with Diddy. And I think we have to be very careful in regards to that. Everybody that was connected to Diddy was not behaving and carrying themselves like Diddy. So if you want to knock somebody for being associated with Diddy and going to the parties, that's your right. But that doesn't mean that they were doing Diddy type shit as far as drugging, assault, you know, physical, mental, like that. No. Again, based on what I've seen up to this point, I haven't seen enough evidence for me even to think that this won't be dropped. And again, the lawyer has a reputation for chasing headlines. He loves the attention. I'm not saying he's not a good lawyer. Clearly, he's a good lawyer because a lot of these separate celebrities and a lot of these, he's representing some high profile celebrity and athletic clientele. But what I'm saying to you is he's never dealt with the likes of a Jay-Z. Jay-Z may be a billionaire, but that, you know, those street smarts in terms of survival, those things don't go away. Those things don't go away at all. That street is still in Jay-Z from a standpoint of survival. He just translated that to the corporate world. He translated that to the business world. Jay-Z's not going to do anything. It's not going to be any street shit towards Tony Busby. Tony Busby, not by any stretch of imagination. What I'm telling you is, Jay-Z, this guy is as calculated and he is a chess master. So I hope that, you know, Busby did his due diligence on Jay-Z and fully understands who he's dealing with from that standpoint. And again, I'm not dismissing this, whoever the victim is, as a liar. I don't know. I haven't seen enough evidence to say. You have to see right now. I haven't seen enough evidence to. I take the serious. I take the accusation seriously. Of course, I take it seriously as somebody on the outside looking in. But I'm not going to sit up here and convict Jay-Z based off his association with Sean Combs. I'm not going to do that. Because that is a very, 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 very slippery slope. to say the least. Everybody was not, you know, everybody wasn't moving like Diddy. Everybody connected to Diddy was not moving like Diddy. Who won the week? This is a very easy one. Juan Soto, the newly New York Met, signed a 15-year, $765 million deal. The richest contract, not only in the history of baseball, but in the history of sports in terms of total value. He has an opt-out clause in 2030 at the age of, I think, 31. He'll be 31 when that opt-out clause takes place. And that will give him a chance to be the first billion-dollar contractual athlete from a standpoint. He without question, if he stays healthy, this guy is one of the top five players in all of baseball. We know how special of a talent he is. The Nationals have not been the same since they traded him. And again, this opt out, he'll be 31 during his opt out, and he can opt out after it's a 2030 season, and renegotiate his contract. And again, he'll have a chance to sign that instead of 10 years, $460 million that were remaining, that he'll probably be 10 years, $1 billion possibly. If contracts, that will be the market value. If the production remains what it is, and if the contracts keeps escalating the way they are. Now, it's not even so much the money. 15 is the amount of years. We saw Ohtani signed a 10-year, $700 million contract with the Dodgers, but it's the Dodgers, and they immediately resulted in the World Series. So that contract is already from that standpoint. And for what Shohei Ohtani is the best player in baseball, you win a championship, and for the amount of marketing and merchandise that he's moved in LA, he's already worth that contract. Like, he will far exceed that contract. Soto with the Mets, I don't know. I've never been big on these contracts for a player. I don't care. We've seen how this movie has gone. Mike Trout, Alex Rodriguez, a number of players over the years. Again, A-Rod to Texas, Mike Trout to the Angels. These, you know, insane contracts and for the most part, they haven't worked. They have not worked, because in baseball, unlike basketball, unlike being a quarterback in football, you can go out there and hit 60 home runs and finish on a last place team. Your impact is not like those other sports in regards to the contracts, in regards to what you're getting, what you're making. Again, Soto, again, coming off of, he had a big year in New York. Apparently, the Yankees were $4 million short, And this guy's a special player. We know anybody watching him in DMV, how big he was, how important he was to that 2019 championship team that the Nationals had. Listen, he's a special player. And, you know, give him a lot of credit. Turning down $440 million, he gets $765. Again, he will. There's no question in my mind that he's opting out in 2030, and he would be the number one guy. I would say would be the first $1 billion. Will sign the first $1 billion contract in sports, in the history of sports. So without question, Juan Soto wins the week. Real thoughts before I let you go out. Hip hop album of the year. It really was a two horse race to me. Kendrick made a late push with GNX, which is a phenomenal album. Not a classic, but a phenomenal album. But the album that I think, to me, had the most, was the best album from start to finish, was the album that had the best production. The album that, you know, I never stopped playing from the time it came out up until now, was Schoolboy Q. Best from a production standpoint, the production on that album is next level. I mean, absolutely next level production. The West Coast is dominating, right? And had a big year for the West Coast in general with what Kendrick did. Then Staples had a tremendous album as well, legit top five albums to be. You had Ab Soul had a great album. So the West, you know, it was the year of the West. It was the year of the West Coast, without for sure. Doechii's album, I love Doechii's album. I love Alligator Bites Never Heal. I love that album. That album may have had the best replay value out of any album in 2024. And she is going, you know, she right now, like, there's no woman rapper right now, like, spitting like that. Like, it's just not. She is on another level right now. Again, y'all can talk Latto, Gorilla, whoever y'all, Meg, whoever y'all want to take. Doechii right now is at the top of the heat in terms of women, in terms of ladies. And I frankly don't even think it's close. I frankly don't think it's close. Her album, that if it's not for Schoolboy Q, that Doechii album would be my album of the year. Like, easily. That's how spectacular that album was. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of The Real Deal Podcast. Enjoy the rest of your week. I'll see you next time.